You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And Patrick is out. What is he doing? Is he gallivanting?
He's probably gallivanting.
A bit. A little bit. He's enjoying.
Not, he'd rather be home at this point.
Looking good. Yeah, I know. He speaks big talk. When he talked to us last time, he put on a good show. Like, oh boy, I really wish I was there. Oh, I can't wait to get home. Now he's like going and seeing all these sites. He's apparently staying at some resort. So that
doesn't have good internet, apparently.
Oh yeah, thanks for that, Pete.
Not the worst possible internet, but some pretty bad.
This is a kind of special episode. Because Tom and I have been talking about it, and Pat too, but he's overseas. But it's like a weird time. Everybody is tripped out. We certainly are tripped out in certain ways to certain extents. And what we were thinking was, hey, let's do a little more recording this week, both because I have a little extra time. Tom has a little time between dealing with crazy stuff that hopefully
public health crisis and yeah.
Yeah. Like, I want you to talk about that a little bit, sure. As much as you can. Yeah. But then, so we're going to put out a little more content for everybody and just do something that hopefully distracts people, gives people something else to think about and do when they are doing what we consider the responsible thing, which is the social distancing thing. I think it's difficult. We're social people. We like to go out. We like to do things. But now's not the time for that when it puts you in contact with a lot of other people. It's really crazy how different things are, even just in a series of days. The last time we recorded was Wednesday night.
Right. And life, a lot has changed in those 96 hours or so.
And that was when – so that was right after the NBA season had been canceled.
Right.
Tom Hanks, all that. I think that was happening live as we recorded. So,
yeah.
Everybody stay safe. We're going to do what we can.
Tom Hanks thing seems like it was a month ago.
I know. Yo.
Literally the live thing that was coming up as we were chatting.
We're here. You're here. Hopefully you're home with your family, whoever's in your close circle and not spreading disease. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we're going to talk hardcore. Big shout outs to our four sponsors: To Live Alive Records, Closed Casket Activities, Run for Cover Records, and Death Wish Inc. We're not doing a full ad read. Please go to their websites, enter the promo code
Extra Grind.
And Tom, what do you do with that?
You're going to have to spell that out.
Yes. Do that. Support artists, support record labels, go to their sites. Buy stuff. It's one of the things that I hope people are enjoying and getting a chance to catch up on. To get into that, how crazy is it that it feels like Wednesday feels like a month ago? I almost can't remember earlier in that week. Like Monday, people were like just glad handing even though this was on radar.
Right. Yeah. It just... And I mean, for everyone that's listening, we were recording this on Sunday afternoon, so it's really not even that long. Right. Not to let you behind the curtain.
Yeah, no, that's actually good. This is good reference point, because who knows by the time we put this up, which might be as soon as not tomorrow, but maybe Wednesday, things might be radically different too. So this is an evolving situation, and we're going to talk about some stuff that's happened recently. Really quick. So for me, Tom, Easton School, my son, who's in kindergarten, they announced that they're closed indefinitely.
Wow.
I have a feeling that's happening a lot of places. I heard New York City's not but that's because they're trying to figure out how to
get like
ensure that
kids yeah. are so fucked up, man.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And God, and like, hey, a lot of our healthcare providers aren't have children, and if they have to take care of their children, they can't go to work, and that is, you know, catch 22 on us.
Right. I mean, if this, I mean, not to get too political, but if this doesn't show you things need to change, this is, I think this is the most like stark kind of example of like, oh, weird. Like none of this stuff is in place. Like if everyone had healthcare,
yeah,
we'll be able to get taken care of. Or like we'd have, you know,
yeah. Like we don't need to get too political, but like I'm exactly on the same page in that Tom literally like 2 hours ago, I said the exact sentence, like, if this doesn't show that we need change in a very serious way, like people say that the changes that are being talked about by some people are radical. It's not radical to think that people shouldn't have to be worried about dying from this pandemic. Like that we shouldn't be, that we should have been prepared, because this has been going on since November, December.
Yeah,
this in China, you know,
by any means, this isn't like, this didn't come up 2 weeks ago, you know. Right. But I mean, it's you know, it's scary that like kids have to choose to go to school so they can get like two meals. Like that's fucked. Awful. That's, you know, awful. What I mean? There's a lot of places that can close down because they're, you know, I mean, not to say that you live in like, you know, like Beverly Hills or anything, but like no. The kids can stay home from Easton's class because it's like
from the school. Yeah, right, but, right. And I think they're even, that's not, you know, the town I live in, because Easton goes to school in the next town over, the town I live in, I think they're dealing with that in a more serious way in terms of meals, in terms of, so what I'm seeing also from different places is that schools are closing as schools, but are either one offering like, hey, we're closed, but if you need a meal, you can come here from 8:30 to 10 in the morning, from 12 to 2 in the afternoon, or from 4 to 5 in the evening to get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's crazy. One. Two, and this is happening in other countries, but I'm willing to bet it's going to start happening in the States, likely in New York City, is that schools are closing as schools, but they're going to open as daycares to say, hey, if you need someone to watch your child, we're going to have services here available for that. And this is happening in Belgium, I'm told, partially because they don't want children who've been, you know, exposed to other children, maybe your carriers, whatever, to have to go to the next most logical babysitter while mom and dad are working, which is grandma and grandpa.
Right, right. And so fucked. And then I was reading something, they were thinking about turning the SUNY, like State University of New York dorms, yep, to hospitals because there's not enough space.
In Spain, what's his name? The soccer player. Whatever. One of the most popular soccer players. He owns a chain of hotels, and he's turning them into hospitals.
Right.
And he's covering all the expenses. What?
Right. I mean, two things with that. Like, number one, like, China was able to build a new hospital in like 10 days.
Yeah.
I was like, just listen to somebody. They're like, well, we can't do that here. Why the fuck not? I know.
Exact,
you know,
question. You know, exact right question. Why not?
Like, why? It's like a fait accompli. Like, oh, well, I mean, we could do that. You know, and then, you know, it's fucked up that when you look at, like, you know, this will, you know, be up your alley, like 19-year-old fucking Zion Williamson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is willing to be like, hey, all the vendors, the, you know, all the ushers, everybody.
Everybody works at the stadium, yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. Like, I'll take care of you for this month. Kid's fucking old. Not making a ton of money yet.
Yeah. Well, he's making, right.
I mean, he's making money. Let's be real.
He's making money. But no. Like, the big question, you're pointing out the exact right thing. He's making like 10 mil on his contract because he's the number one pick. But like, that's pennies. Pennies. The owner of the team is a multi-billionaire. Why aren't they footing the bill? Because other teams are. Bless up to the sports teams who are footing the bill. Bless up to the companies like Taco Bell, who are saying, hey, all of our employees are going to get paid, period. End of story.
My buddy Blue was out on tour, and this is like a rarity. So he was out with the Refused tour. That ended. He hopped on it a tour with like a very famous comedian. I don't know if he wants his information out there or whatever.
Sure.
Big, you know, playing like arenas and stuff in some parts in like the southwest of the US, whatever. Mm-hmm. So he was on the tour for like 2 days. Obviously, they had to call it because everything's going on. That dude ensured that literally everyone that worked on that entire tour got paid for the entire tour.
That's awesome.
It was like 3 weeks worth of dates that got canceled, but he made sure that everyone that worked for him got their full 3 weeks pay, which I was like, that's, you can do that. If that's socialism, sign me the fuck up. There's no reason 100%. Why he couldn't, you know what I mean? Like, to this dude, who's like a famous fucking comedian, like, okay, what is it, Tim? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a big deal.
And you know what it is? What is it to him? It's being a decent human. So right. Bless up to all the decent humans out there. Let's stay decent. Let's try to be good to each other. Let's bring this closure home. And on the other side of things, personally for me, Amanda's not traveling. She was supposed to be in Europe all week last week. Thankfully, the conferences in Europe were pretty smart and decided to cancel. Yeah, right. A little early, so she didn't have to travel. Right, I know. And she's not traveling for the foreseeable future, so we're all good. What's going on for you? You've been, because I know this from, you know, the peel back the curtain, you've been working like crazy because your job kind of is a face-to-face, we have to meet with people job.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we're not closed yet. We keep getting like, so we're not like, so my, a lot of my job entails, well, not mine, like the people that work for me, like entails going to Rikers Island to visit with clients and all that sort of stuff to make sure like that they're ready to kind of come back to the community and all sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of pulled the plug early on that just because I didn't want like my folks traveling, maybe contracting it and not knowing. Cause I mean, most of my staff are super young, and then bringing it to some person who may be immunocompromised on the island, and then it's a wrap.
Yep.
The city didn't tell us to do that. I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. No one's going. You know, and I had to make that kind of call.
Good. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, for everybody's sake, you know. And then, because, I mean, it's also people get, you know, kind of prone to hysteria. And it's kind of like someone that he knows somebody else that has it. So we want to quarantine this guy. I'm like, we can't go. Like, it's got to be some kind of, you know. And then we keep getting direction from, like, the courts. So I work in, like, you know, with a lot of, like, the criminal court, Supreme Court, yes. in all the boroughs. They're like trying to like limit the amount of people coming in and out of there, but they can't actually close because, which makes sense. Yeah. If you're stuck on, you know, you get arrested for some bullshit.
Yeah.
And you're going to do 3 days on, you know, whatever. Now you're stuck for a fucking month. That's like,
right. Yeah. The thing that's not stopping is people are still going to be arrested and still going to be put in jail.
Right. It's like a constitutional question that you have to be able to see, you know, a judge, you have to see your attorney. So it's like, they can't shut down altogether.
Right.
So that's one of the few things that it's like, well, they can't go away. If there's other things that are like that they can be postponed or like be done like remotely.
Yeah.
Like part of my job is like we do like alternatives to incarceration. So if you get arrested for something and the court parties are all in agreement. So like the ADA, the defense attorney, and the judge think that treatment might benefit you better more than you spending fucking 5 years in prison. We're the program that kind of makes sure that you go somewhere, that you're in treatment, all this sort of stuff, and we report back to the courts. But usually the client has to show up at every court date, and we have to show up with like updates from all the different treatment providers to say like, so Bob is doing really well at program, and he's not missed anything, and he's complying with medication, and he's this and that, and you know, all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now the courts are wanting us to do that all remotely. You email me that memo. Like you don't have to come and like go on record.
Right. And exactly. That exact point which you made, which is that the courts have to stay open. They're still they're part of the function, constitutionality. It puts services like yours in this weird netherworld where you're partially required, you need to be available, but at the same time, when does that call get made where it's like, hey, we're going to temporarily suspend or limit or, you know, basically, and that's tough. That's going to be really tough because it's an important service that's being provided.
Yeah. I mean, and we help people that are at risk. So like the majority of our clients are homeless.
Yeah.
So like what, you're going to show up and like the doors are going to be locked and be like, sorry. You know what I mean? And like, I'm a boss. I could probably work from home 90% of the time.
Uh-huh.
But what kind of a leader would I be if I'm making people that are making, you know, half of what I make to go at work. Like, fuck that. I'm going. Like, I don't give a shit. You know,
yeah,
like
no, I mean, it's the right thing to do for sure. For sure. Well, stay safe. The city seems like it's on the verge of getting pretty wacky, but we'll see. I mean, it's a wild time.
Queens still looks normal. Queens, people don't fuck around in Queens.
Good job. Go Queens.
Just out fucking getting food, fucking just hanging.
What's the irony of the, like, this week for people not in the Northeast U.S., because I know there's actually been blizzards, there's been all this wacky stuff weather-wise across the country and across the world, obviously, but it's been like spring.
Yeah, of course.
And it's been like 65, 70. It's like...
it's going to have been first, fucking ice
first nice... Yeah. Yeah, couldn't this have been... It's like first nice day of the year. Everybody's excited to be out. This is like the best time to be in New York City, and it's not the time to be out and about. So, all right. So let's kind of start pivoting.
Hardcore.
One of the things that's interesting is how this is impacting hardcore. We didn't really talk about it too much last week, maybe a little bit, but we're hitting the point where a lot of shows and tours have been canceled or are being canceled. One of the biggest shows that was set to happen this weekend was last night. It was Code Orange's record release show for the new record. What is the new record called? Is it last one? What's that? Yeah. Underneath. You're right. Underneath. And the record release show, it was supposed to be Every Time I Die.
Right. Bass Rec, Zao.
Yeah.
Machine Girl was on that too.
True. And maybe one or two more. But unfortunately, given the circumstances, and you know, rightfully so, Code Orange canceled. First question for you, Tom. Yeah. Right move to cancel?
100%. I don't even know how much say they actually had.
Right.
Quite honest with you. I don't know what went on in like Pittsburgh as far as like, because I know in like Chicago, they were like limiting like a Vail showing. So they do like a thing in Chicago, like it's March 12th. So like 312 is the Chicago area code.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They do like a fest, like, you know, so like Every Time I Die, I was playing the Metro and Avail was playing this place, and like the Avail show got canceled.
Whoa.
Started. Every Time I Die show went on because people were already, so like the mayor and the governor, all this stuff, convened like this like conference.
Yeah.
But, like, people were inside for Every Time I Die. So they're like, what's worse? Like, if we tell everyone just to go home, this may end poorly. Well, we just like get the show on the road. Let's go. And then Every Time I Die played, Avail got canceled.
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, people that like Avail are probably more in the danger zone in the age range.
Yeah. To be quite honest
with it. So the same thing with Pittsburgh. I don't know if they had any kind of like anyone over, you know, any.
Like yeah, right.
I mean, the venue they were playing was pretty big.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So,
yeah.
We're starting to hit this point, and I'm not going to kind of really get into it, but I know the impulse. I know that there's a lot of people, like, just the same reason we're doing this podcast, and we're going to do some extra episodes and try to kind of give you something here is people are looking for distractions. They're looking for things to do to kind of think about something else. Yo, the only reason if this podcast was a live show, we wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
Period, end of story. Fortunately, it's something that people listen to by themselves in their house, in their car, whatever. I encourage everyone, and I'm somebody who booked a lot of shows, and I was thinking about this while I was driving home today. I had to go to the supermarket that straight up looked like, you know, the photos we used to see in elementary school. Tom, I'm sure you saw these too. Of like the bread lines in Soviet Russia.
Yeah.
Like the walking around the grocery store and everything's barren. That's what it looked like. It's like some Mad Max shit. But I was thinking about it and I'm like, you know, last summer I booked those Have Heart shows in Worcester and they were big.
Yeah.
And they were just pure attendance numbers, right? You know, like 2,500 and then 8,000 something, you know, like
those numbers still blow my mind.
It's insane. It's really insane to think about. But thinking about that, I'm like, what if those shows were in 3 weeks from now?
Right. But also think about the second half of our show. There was that giant lightning storm that was coming through. So you kind of had to deal and put on that show in less than favorable conditions.
That's true. Yeah. And it was a fear because it was a safety issue. And
I mean, same idea.
Yeah, no, it's true. So so to give the backstory on that, I don't think we've ever really talked about this.
No.
The first show was indoors, and we'll tie this back to what we were talking about
before. It'll all make sense.
Yes, we'll get there. So first show, first night was indoors, 2,500 tickets. It sold out in 30 seconds. To enable that not happening again, we decided to do the second show outside, which opened up to 10 to 12,000 tickets, which we really didn't anticipate coming close to that. But we said, you know, if you get 2,500 in 30 seconds, 5,000 is probably not out of the question. But regardless, it's outside. When you do a show outside, well, good thing about doing a show outside, you have, and especially it was in a big parking lot, we could have maneuvered fencing, do this, that, the other, to close it in so that it wasn't like, oh, there's 4,000 people here, but they're spread out all over the place and it looks sparse. There's things you can do. You can do that indoor at venues, and that happens at festivals, large and small, across the country and all over the place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you move the thing up so that the pictures look better, whatever. So you can do that, but it also enabled it to be wide open. The bad thing about doing any kind of live event outside is you have to worry about the weather. For the month leading up to the show, and even before that, even the first time we talked about it, Pat Flynn and I were like, oh, well, what if it rains?
Right.
You know? And because part of the other side was that doing another show indoors, we probably could have like figured it out. It could have been a matinee inside. But again, the capacity is 2,500. It's not ideal. Static X had a big show at the Palladium. That had been booked and reserved months and months before. So we didn't have that option. But it's like, okay, if it rains, then we could push it to Sunday. Which stinks because, you know, people are thinking they're going to go to the show on Saturday, thinking they're going to the show on Saturday, drive home.
Was there any talk about using a DCU down the street?
Only...
I don't know. I'm not trying to like, put you on the spot.
No, only the day before. Friday of the show,
right.
I was scouting out, like, oh, I wonder if I could rent that covered parking garage. I wonder if I could, there's a parking garage that was a visible site, right? And like, what's the situation at the DCU? Which again, it would have been insane and probably not worked and cost a lot of money, but okay, we'll figure it out. So luckily the rain was there was rain in the forecast, but it was like, the probability was all over the place. At first it was like 100% on the Wednesday before. It was like 100% chance, but doesn't start till late evening. And we knew this was a matinee kind of deal.
Right.
And so, you know, inside camp of this, everybody was tripped out, at least to a certain extent. By Friday, it had dropped to like a 60% chance and it was starting late. But then Saturday, the prediction was rain starting at 1 p.m. Friday for Saturday, it said rain starting at 1 p.m. That's right. And so we're like, fuck, what do we do? Wake up in the morning and it had pushed back a little bit. And it was like rain at a 30% chance at 1, 40% at 2, 60% at 3, 100% at 4, something like that.
So you're stuck.
So we're stuck and we're like, we can't cancel. It's day of, but what are we supposed to do? Are we going to have the bands play? Because we also knew that we were letting Anxious and One Step Closer play a few songs before everything started just to kind of help them out. And we knew that we couldn't rush to get bands on, even though that was part of what the venue wanted to do, because rightfully so, you know, like there's going to be a lot of people here. Let's get the bands on going right away. But we still wanted people to be in the, you know, we wanted people to be able to see all the bands. End of story. And the line wrapped and wrapped and wrapped. So you got to let people get in and then have bands start. So long story short, the rain holds off Have Heart finishes their set. And I mean, Tom, how soon after their set finished?
I mean, it felt like 5 minutes.
I think it was literally like maybe 15, maybe. Yeah, because it felt like 5 minutes to me too. They finish, people start clearing out. Like when the first thunder, you know, the thunder strike, the clap, there were still hundreds of people at the merch tables. So we had to get up over the PA and be like, okay, everybody, rain and thunder and lightning is coming right now. Get out of here. This is a big open parking lot. Nothing says disaster like this, you know, except for the fact that I'd say 85% of the people were out of there by then, but it was just amazing. The people who were left when that thunder struck, there was an audible like, oh, from everyone there. It was amazing.
Right, right. It was insane.
Yeah.
And the skies are kind of like, oh boy, like, you know, this is going to be a photo finish. It looked like the world was going to end as, you know, they were ending. It couldn't work out any better.
Yeah. There's a lot of luck involved in that. We kept a cool head. You don't have a choice. If you're panicking, it's going to be bad. And you know, it was truly ominous. What Tom said is dead on. You could look at the sky and you saw the clouds coming in and rolling in. And it was like, okay. Eventually, people will probably get to see that in a video set at some point. So that's really cool. All that is to say, we were in a really tough spot because here's this giant show. And what the fuck are we supposed to do?
Right.
We don't want to cancel it. We don't want to postpone it. Like, because like the whole thing was predicated on the fact that, okay, they're doing these four shows in the US, four shows in Europe, and that's it. There's going to be two shows in Worcester that weekend, two shows in LA the following weekend. Then they go to Europe 2 weeks later and do boom, 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 get everything done. And it was that we couldn't like go, oh, okay, you know what? This show is postponed on Saturday. We'll do it next weekend. We had the option to do it on a Sunday, but still, you don't want to do that. But then you also have to factor in the safety of people.
Right.
So this is not a plea to anyone. I think there's people doing stuff. I know the guys in United Blood are still planning to continue with their fest, and I hope it works out because I feel scared that they have to follow what the government says and what the local, you know, people say as far as capacity and what's allowed. I get worried that the fear of this by that point is going to disable people going and be a headache and a nightmare. But like canceling something like that sucks. It would be like a tremendous effort to try to go backwards and like, what are you going to do? Refund everyone? What are you going to do? Like that's probably 8 hours of sitting in front of a computer figuring out how to refund everybody. Even just if it's clicking a button that says refund, you know?
Right, right, right.
So what I am trying to say is that people be safe out there. If you're planning to tour, relax, hold off for a minute. I was supposed to go out with the band Anxious for a weekend with Saves the Day. At the end of this month, that got canceled, obviously. And it's better to be safe than sorry right now. We just don't have enough information. So I hope everyone's being safe out there. That said, yes. Code Orange was supposed to do this record release show in Pittsburgh. We don't know if it was their choice to do this or not. But what I think anyone in the sound of my voice, our voices, has to give them credit for is they didn't let the show being shut down stop them.
No. And quite honestly, I mean, do we want to get into the shit?
Let's get into the shit.
This was probably better than playing that show.
How so?
The way
I agree.
The stuff that they were able to pull off watching. I mean, I downloaded Twitch to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I am an adult. I do not watch other people play video games.
And now you have a Twitch account.
Now I have a Twitch account because of Code Orange. So
that might come in handy. By the end of this week, dude, we might be on NBA 2K20 streaming. So who knows?
That's true.
Let's not rule it out.
Fair. And but just like a lot of this stuff was like overlaying some of like the video content that they had put out when they were releasing the singles, like over the lives. I don't know how the fuck they did it. Either it wasn't actually live, and this is me not talking shit, because I my head can't figure out how they did this otherwise.
Yeah.
But like, so it's like that last video they came out with, like the guy, like the glittery dude.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Proposed as they're playing that song. It was like, and I'm not really prone to hyperbole.
Uh-huh.
Watching this, I was like I felt like, and this is going to sound so stupid, but I, that's the vibe I got. I was like, oh, I'm watching history.
Oh, wow. I mean, you're not the only person I've heard say that either, though.
Like, just the way it pulled off. Like, they played it, like, and I give them all the credit in the world, because I feel like if that was me, I'd be fucking hamming it up, because I know, like, well, no one's watching me here.
Yep.
So you half-ass it, or you're like, fucking, like,
or you go too far, right?
Yeah. Or you're like, oh, this is stupid, there's no one listening. You know, like, they played it as if there was fucking 1,400 people packed in that room, fucking
going nuts, right?
Fucking Goldman gave an empty fucking gave the entire empty venue the double fucking middle finger, third one part. I was like, this is fucking amazing. They like bought into it. The visuals are amazing. Like, the stage plot is fucking ridiculous. It's, I can't say enough. And I know, like, I've seen somebody, 12,000 people watched it.
Right. Yeah. I saw that number too. That's so 12,000 people watched it. That's amazing.
Right.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of rewatch value on that.
It's on there. Yeah. It's up now. Like, you can watch it anytime.
And I saw a little bit. I saw the very beginning where Jamie said some cool stuff before they started their set. I want to give them credit. As a dude who's not necessarily like a fan, I would certainly say I'm not a fan, but I think it's hard not to respect them as a band and as artists and doing what they're doing. Like, I actually think that what they're doing in this phase of, you know, and it sounds crass talking about a band who came from the underground as a, like, at this phase in their career, but like, yo, that's where they're at. This is a career for those folks.
Yeah.
But they're doing stuff that's really, truly creative. I think they're doing the video series is very well done.
Yeah.
It's a complete narrative. I think incorporating that into their live show is really smart and unique. I also think, to be really honest, and I'll pull up a question here we got asked, but to be really honest, I think the way they did that live show, I don't think it's ever going to replace playing live and playing shows and people going to see them live. It's just a different thing. However, I do think that between the videos they did for those singles and then this performance, they're doing something new in the video space with music. And I don't think anyone's done anything interesting or cool with videos and music for almost like 20 years. You know what I mean?
I mean, quite honestly, like, just watching this and sort of, like, it was perfect for them, because I feel like their music, their vibe is kind of, like, futuristic to a point, very, like, cold and, like, digital, you know what I mean? And this is, like, so, like, now, like, Dropkick Murphys are doing one on Tuesday. I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah.
Like, this was their, like, watching this was, like, you're, like, I don't know, Bob, do you remember there was like a fake snuff movie that Nine Inch Nails put out?
Do you remember? Yes, I do. I do remember that, yeah.
I remember seeing it as like a relatively young person and being like, holy fuck, this is real. Apparently it wasn't. This almost had that vibe.
Wow.
Kind of like, oh, this is like, this fits them perfectly. I mean, it was also the first time seeing Jamie as the front person.
Which, like, to be honest, plays into this narrative well.
Insane. It was perfect. He looks like Pete Steele fronting a hardcore band.
I thought it was impressive. I thought it was an impressive transition.
Who's the drummer?
I have no idea.
Why is he wearing a mask? Like, someone that it's, you're going to be like, oh shit, that's like Jay Weinberg or something.
So I have a like, let's cards on the table. Of the new album stuff. Are you vibing on it purely music? Because we're both effusive in our praise of them creatively and what they're doing with their video and then this live performance. Musically, how's the stuff you've heard from the new album, how is it hitting you?
I liked it. It's different.
Yeah.
There's more Reba.
Yep, which we think is awesome. A strength.
Yeah, of course. Live, I think it comes across incredibly well.
Okay.
Just like literally everything you hear on that record, they somehow recreate it live, and then it's 100 times heavier. Like, so every weird like glitch, all the shit, like,
yeah,
it's on. Like the dude, I don't know his name, they call him Shade.
The
guitar player. So he has like this full fucking like array of like digital things around him that he plays in. So it's like keyboards and, you know, all these different effect things, and he plays guitar back there.
Like, oh, wow. He's playing guitar too back there.
Yes, on certain songs, mostly the old stuff. So sometimes they play with three guitar players. But like, so he's able to, like, that's literally, he's most of the time he's on like the kind of effects stuff. And like, it's nailed, like, it's, they must have spent so much time, even before this whole shit, like getting that nailed to like, it's perfect. There's like not a misstep the entire time.
Yeah. I think they probably spend a lot. It's like, here's the deal. I'm not behind there. I don't know any of these folks. It's pure speculation. I have a feeling they work very, very hard to make all of it seem super cohesive. Musically, as a record, do you think you'll like this as much as I Am King or Forever? Or do you think it's like, you'll be like, oh, it's cool, but maybe it's not intended for you.
That's tough to say.
Too early to say.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's just only came out on Friday, so I've listened to a couple of times. I'm like super familiar with those other ones, but like, it's really fun. Good. And I think this is like, I have a friend that's like almost exclusively black metal and like bands without vowels in their names, mm-hmm. and like he's on a group chat with Max Vick.
Oh yeah,
and he was like, gotta say, man, it's really fucking impressive. Like, this is like, he was like so effusive in his praise, and he like never really listened before. So I think like a lot of, you know, for any fucking, you know, hardcore kid that they may lose.
Yeah.
They might get three of those dudes that are
three metal dudes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, I think it's, I'll be very, very just blunt and straight up. I Am King does nothing for me. Forever doesn't really do anything for me. I respect some of the things they've tried to do, but musically I didn't like it. I've sat with it a lot. This stuff I think is clearly their least hardcore.
Sure.
But it's also the material that musically I'm like, oh, this is the most interesting and cohesive. And I appreciate the most. I am so curious how people who love hardcore are going to receive it. I think there will be some attrition, but I also think if people can accept that, hey, they're kind of growing into something different, and it's not hardcore and it's okay. You know, maybe we need to make those shirts like, it's okay not to drink. It's not hardcore and it's okay. That there has to be an appreciation for how much blood, sweat, and tears these dudes go through and put in to their craft, coming from a completely underground space. Because I want to say this too. I've been involved in projects that were completely 100% DIY and had the people shit on them because it seemed too professional, because we were just fucking good at it. Because we put in the extra effort to make something that we were proud of and that we thought looked great. And it was three dudes and one other hardcore kid we brought in to do a thing. And I think anyone who's knocking Code Orange should keep that in mind, that I have a feeling almost everything you're seeing is from their brains, from their effort, from their work, and they deserve a lot of respect for that. So, So big shout out to them. In that energy, go to store.codeorangetoth.com. They have a bunch of stuff up there. Pick it up. I think that's cool. No discounts from Axe to Grind, but go there and support them. Check out the new record.
Spring tour got fucked because of this.
The coronavirus stuff, there's the bands who are getting hit. I don't think anyone is getting too sad about booking agents, but I got a couple of friends who are booking agents and some of them on smaller levels, some of them on much larger levels. Some of them are really fucked up right now because they aren't making any money for the next several months. And, you know, just on the behind the scenes, pull back the curtain on some of that. They aren't you know, filthy rich people from this. Some people are, but the ones I know are not, and they're going to be struggling.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gourley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
So big shout out to everyone who's getting impacted by this. I think it's really sad. Let me see. I have one Patreon question about the Code Orange show. I think we dealt with most of it. But Anson asks, I just watched the Code Orange Underneath release stream on Twitch. He's saying right after the stream ended, they had almost 90,000 viewers. I bet it's 90,000 views, people clicking in and out. Because the number I saw, Tom, co-signed me with this, was 12,000 people, right?
That's what I had heard from a bunch of people.
Yeah. Anson asks, is this the start of something new in terms of streaming live shows? Seems like even if things were normal and there was no coronavirus, reaching that many people is way better than 900 people. It's kind of unbelievable how big that number is.
I mean, also, I don't know, Bob would remember, but like, you used to be able to watch CB shows.
That's true. I do remember that.
I mean, they're like fucking torturous sometimes.
Yeah, single camera from the back.
Right. There was one camera on the side and one camera way back, like near kind of like where that where the tables and chairs were.
Yep, the seating section. Yeah.
Right. But like a couple of times, like I mean it was super slow and everything, but they were streaming all the way back then.
True. I remember those. I forgot about those until you brought it up.
I feel like Chain used to do that too.
Yep, they did. Yep. Totally. So that used to be a venue thing. Starting maybe as even as early as the like early 2000s. And it was like that weird, you can stream this, but it's literally choppy the entire time. And like,
right. It's not that enjoyable.
No, it was like watching it through the glitch, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly what, and it was like very kind of like, it wasn't totally clear. And it, you know, like GB would be like, slow down.
GB was one of the ones I watched from the CB feed.
That makes sense. Yeah. But I think, you know what they should do if they were smart? And I don't know if this is feasible. But how? You can't watch your home team's games?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You should be like, yo, we're playing fucking, you know, Irving Plaza tomorrow night. If you live outside, you know, New York City.
90 miles,
Yeah, you can access it for $1 or free or whatever. Oh, but, like, see, you can't access it unless you have, like, some weird VPN thing.
So, yo, when you tie in the dollar of view, I actually think that's a cool idea.
I would pay. Well,
I agree. It's interesting. I'm not a huge video guy, but let me put in three pieces. Do I think this will be a thing? Maybe. I think there will be people who try, but we'll see how successful. I don't think people are as creative or have the ingenuity that Code Orange did to make it not just like a cool, hey, we're playing, but to make it so dynamic and visually stimulating.
Like, if you told me they planned this for 6 months, I'd be like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, right. Like, they I can't believe they nailed it the way they did. I mean, yeah. I guess you should, because they've been aesthetically really nailing things for a long time. But two, would people, I love the idea of being like a radius clause, actually, like a fan, like, hey, sorry, if you're in the market, you go to the show or you don't, because I wouldn't want people to opt to watch it online over go to the show. Sorry, just the way it is. But three, if you could actually create that as a revenue generator, throw an extra $50 in somebody's van, all right, now we're cooking. Like, that's a cool thing. So I think there's some pretty smart people out there. Give this a whirl, check it out, see if
15%.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You got a vig on this one. So, Anson, thank you for that question.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, like, smaller bands that are on tour, right? Fucking Sanction is in, you know, playing Chain Reaction.
Yep.
Maybe some of their friends back home want to see how it's going.
100%.
You drop a dollar, you don't have to watch the whole fucking set.
Nobody gives a shit. You throw them a buck just to like throw them a tip.
Right. There was a friend of mine worked for, like, it was something along the lines of YouTube. Uh-huh. But it wasn't YouTube, but it was like all these, like, weird influencers and, like, people that you're like, this person's famous, like, you wouldn't know why. And, like, what do they do live? Like, they rap and they tell jokes. It's like, fucking, you know, whatever YouTube, like, influencers, like all the people that Greg worked for. But she worked for them, and it was the same kind of thing. Like, you could, like, tip them money. I mean, I guess they do that on other sites.
They do that. Twitch does it. But yeah, like that. Like, I think about this. Now we're getting in some real future wave shit. Being able to watch, say there's a live stream of a festival, and you could somehow make it so that, like, hey, while you're watching, let's say Cold World, just picking a name out of a hat, while Cold World is playing, if you tip, the money goes directly to the band.
Yeah.
Kind of sick. Like, a cool thing.
50, half goes to the venue, or half goes to the promoter, whatever.
Even if there's a percentage cut, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do one question so we can kind of fill this episode out. I really like this question we got from Taylor. Changing gears, but, you know, hey, everybody stay safe out there. Shout out to Code Orange. Shout out to live shows. They'll be back soon. Hi, guys. Longtime listener, second time writer. We've discussed Husker Du in the past. I recently made two lists I thought you may appreciate. Top 25 Deathwish and top 25 Bridge Nine records.
Wow.
My caveat was that it couldn't be a record they did vinyl only for, every Converge record. It had to be a full normal release. I picked Deathwish and Bridge Nine because I grew up in Rhode Island going to Boston / Worcester and Providence area shows in the very early 2000s. I went to my first hardcore show in 2000. As such, AN, HopeCon, Panic, Converge, and all of those bands loomed very large for me.
Yeah.
The fresh excitement I got for those two labels back then was utterly unique and special. True. It coincided with the advent of hardcore on the internet. I remember the original Deathwish website. I thought I had found gold. I also remember the Deathwish Bridge Nine Fest they put on at a short-lived Boston area club. I believe it was called The Pond in 2002. Yes, it was called The Pond. It featured AN, Sworn In, Panic, Striking Distance, a lot more. I will forever treasure the emotions and times of first getting in hardcore. There are feelings I still chase to this day. Anyway, list below. Hope they trigger some positive and meaningful thoughts of discussion. Keep up the good work. Taylor, thank you so much. We'll go through these lists in a minute just to kind of stir some conversation. What is your memory of that time frame of when Bridge Nine really started to cook and when Death Wish started to really get going? Right.
That every good band came from Boston.
Yeah, that's true.
And we were just like, hey, we'll play too. we're not terrible. I think like I felt like Boston, I mean, and you read like the articles now about everything, you know what I mean? Because it's all kind of tied into like, hey, they sell Yankee Suck shirts and all stuff, you know, like,
right.
But there's something insane happening there. Converge had been doing Insanity for 10 years prior or whatever.
Yep. They really popped then too, you know, in a different way. Game changer. Yes. And Jane Doe comes out on EVR, which is so interesting. But their presence, I think we will at some point do a real like, hey, let's get into it conversation about all this stuff. My biggest takeaway right now on this is the difference that a couple movers and shakers, really motivated people, can make not just on a local scene, but on a national level.
Right. And some of those records from both labels were so big that you don't realize the ones that didn't hit.
Yeah.
And it's no shock to any, you know what I mean?
But because the records were so big, it was like, oh my God, they put that out? Holy shit.
Right. That you're kind of like, you know, whoever, I mean, there were Bridge Nine bands in 2003 that don't give a fuck about.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
AN being that big, or like, you know, all these bands, you know, kind of overshadowed that. So you would think that both labels were, you know, bat 1,000.
Yeah, no. And they certainly didn't, but a huge shout out to Jake and Trey and the whole team at Deathwish, but especially Jake and Trey for really getting it launched and like doing what they did. A big shout out to Chris Wren, who was really motivated and almost solely on his back those first few years. He really,
that was all him, right?
Yeah. And it was just a really refreshing time. So, all right, I'm going to go through these lists. We'll just do them. It's not going to take too long, but I'll start with Bridge Nine, and then we'll do. Well, let's start with Bridge Nine.
Reverse order.
25, and he did all time. So there's some in here that are later, but you can certainly see where this person's main interests were or when they were super getting into stuff. Number 25, Strike Anywhere, Iron Front. Haven't heard it.
I have. I have a soft spot in my heart for that.
How is that record compared? Like, I know their early albums.
I mean, it's similar. It just, I mean, it's not going to hit you as much as Changes of Sound. You know what I mean? Whatever.
Yeah, the first. Okay. Slapshot, Digital Warfare. He actually put a note in here. Slapshot rules. They play it out a lot locally on this LP, and I think it's underrated. Have you ever heard it?
I check it out. I was never that.
You're not a Slapshot dude.
Snapshot stuff, I didn't care.
Yeah. So for an episode that's going to come later this week, I was checking out records that weren't the classic record for a classic band. Digital Warfare will be put on my list to listen to because for me with Slapshot, if it's not Step On It or Back On The Map, right. It's like a step down and I'm like, I'll be listening to it and be like, yeah, this is fine. Like old time hardcore, there's some cool songs. You know, there's some good songs on most Slapshot records, but I'm like, if I'm itching, I really want those classics.
But they're so good that it's like, even their crap is better than most.
Yes. Yeah. And we'll have more conversations on that this week. R&R Fit for Abuse Split EP. Fit for Abuse is a classic band to me. I strongly encourage everybody to check them out. Cops and Robbers Execution Style EP. This band's kind of in the like street punk meets hardcore wave that if you really dig around, you find a bunch of this stuff from Western Mass into Boston area, whether it's Cops and Robbers, whether it's the Strikers, whether it's like Last in Line touched on that world a little bit, but kind of, or like in Boston in the late 90s into the early 2000s, but really in the late 90s, there was a huge kind of like oi street punk scene, Ducky Boys, and like into spiky punk, and Cops and Robbers kind of came from that scene, but also played hardcore shows. Holding on, question what you live for? Yeah. some people I know really ride for that and okay. never did anything for me.
Yeah.
Good Riddance, Kill Your Idols, Split EP.
Kill Your Idols is always good.
Yeah, yeah. Death Threat, Over My Dead Body, Split EP. I don't remember the material from either band. I wasn't a big Over My Dead Body fan. I love the first two Death Threat records.
I ride hard for both. But these are songs that I probably have watched them play 1,000 times.
Right. And that's from the Golden Age. B9 did a series of splits, and that was, you know, one of them. This one's interesting. Number 18, Breathe In From This Day On. He puts this as the most underrated LP on Bridge 9.
I mean, it definitely is, because that was good.
This was sort of this, like, kind of, they were a divisive band. Taylor, I'm sorry to say this. I think that record sucks, but there are people who liked it. Kind of melodic. I haven't heard it in a long time, so I will revisit, but I believe they were from the Bay Area and didn't do a whole lot. Sworn In, self-titled EP. Yes, the English AN, but I adored it when it came out. English Nightmare. Fuck. Why didn't they just call themselves that? I think this one, it was just too
derivative, right? I mean,
yeah, there was such a wave of bands who were picking, either taking nods from the AN camp or just straight up ripping them off. When it came to Sworn In, it was like, nah, guys, come on. Hide it a little more. Number 16, maybe my most overlooked record that Bridge 9 did, Striking Distance, The Fuse Is Lit EP, the last Striking Distance EP. Great. Moshy, fast, really good.
God, I think of Strike Anywhere and Striking Distance really fucked up by coming out the same time.
Yeah. And from the same general area. Yeah.
Yes, that record is quite good. All their stuff is good, though. I feel like there's no disappointing Striking Distance.
No. I think it's just what's your preference, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I think if I were to, maybe we'll do this at some point, but my favorite of their material is the maybe March to Your Grave LP, but the EP, we did the EP on the year 2000 listening party. And that one song is so fucking good. Everyone listen to Striking Distance. Number 15, this one feels easy. No Warning, self-titled. This is the CD that compiles the 7-inch that originally came out on a different label and their demo tracks. It's great.
I feel like this might be, to me, it's top 10. Maybe.
Oh yeah. I think it's top 10 for me too, but yo, I'm shocked. We're at 15. I'm going to move a little quicker through these. Ceremony, Rohnert Park. Really good record. Really big record.
Didn't realize that was on Bridge 9.
Yep.
I don't think of them as a Bridge 9 band, as weird as that may sound.
Even though I think they did two albums on Bridge 9.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, crazy. Have Heart, Songs to Scream at the Sun at 13. Have a feeling that's a lot of people's in a lot of people's top three.
Sure.
Shark Attack, Blood in the Water EP. Cool record.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Okay. The Hope Conspiracy, File 03 EP.
Great record.
Where is that on your Hope Con? Like, to me, and you should tell me, we're going to forgive Patrick for not being here to tell us that everyone should be listening to Endnote. But like, to me, Hope Con, it's Cold Blue. Code Blue and then the stuff around it is the stuff that I think is the best. This is one of the first EPs, right?
This is between Code Blue and Note.
Okay, good.
They do like a Naked Ray Gun. It's fucking great.
Okay, nice. Number 10, Mental, Get an Oxygen Tank.
Yeah, I mean, this is big to a lot of people.
Yeah, big for me. This is the record where the vocals are really kind of echoey. It's my least favorite of the three Mental 7-inches, but it's fucking still classic. These were the songs that live always went off so fucking hard. Number 9, this one's a little surprise for me. Paint It Black, Amnesia EP. And he says, Taylor says, band needs more love.
Do they?
It's tough. I feel
like it's really big. We don't really care for them.
Correct. You're right. Yeah. Like maybe Axe to Grind needs to love them more, but we don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. Like, that's fine. But, like, I don't think they're, like, underrated. I mean, like, they play, like, Philly and sell it out, and they play Asbury Park and sell it out. So, like, they're doing all right.
Yeah, they're doing fine. I would say, if anything, in the overrated, underrated, properly rated, shout out to Simmons Podcast, they're properly rated. There's people who love them. I don't think there's a ton of people who hate them. And I think there's a ton of people who are like, yeah, they're fine. I don't care. But because he's such a fan, and so far, like, he's got a good list of stuff here, I'm going to listen to this and give it an honest view.
Yeah, he's got a good, like, overview of everything.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's hitting a lot of my sweet spots here. Number 8, Have Heart, The Things We Carry. Shows how much Bridge Nine's put out that he has it at number 8.
Biggest Bridge Nine record?
Let's see. Let's parse that. Most high selling, maybe? No, probably not. I bet there's something that sold more that we wouldn't even put together. Like we got to remember there was times when Bridge Nine put out, like, a Newfound Glory EP in the times where people would still, like, buy CDs at Best Buy. You know,
fair, true.
So, and the records at the top of this list did pretty good too. So, we might have a few contenders. So let's revisit that question. Carry on, A Life Less Plagued,
amazing
classic of the era. Not my bag, but when I re-listened to it recently, I had more appreciation for it for sure. Number 6, this might be in the running for biggest seller, yeah. Terror, Lowest of the Low.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
That's a pretty big one.
Great record. But did they sell big more than Half Heart? Everyone liked Half Heart.
I know, mate. But think about how. We might actually have to do some research on this. Ceremony, Scared People EP, favorite material. It's pretty good. It's not my favorite era of Ceremony.
Where does this lie?
It is. I think it's their first record on Bridge Nine. It's before the Still Nothing Moves You LP. It's a while before Warner Park. It's like coming off the Violence LP, I believe. Somebody, if I'm wrong, correct me.
Is it still that vibe, like that kind of
transitioning? Mess? Yeah, it's transitioning. It's getting a little more like '80s. It will, like, a little more '80s US punk. Like, you know how by, like, Violence has that, like, modern blast beaty, like, frenetic energy, and by Rohnert Park they sound like a Bay Area punk band. They're starting to lean that way, but it's still very aggressive. Like, you're still getting some blasts, I think. Number 4, No Warning, Ill Blood.
I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, top 3 for me, no question. Number 3, and this shows this person's location, Panic, Dying For It. I don't think we've ever talked about Panic.
I actually really like this record. I think also an acolyte of American Nightmare, even though they're probably older and kind of whatever, but, like, I feel like this was their, like, this is Gibby not being a street punk anymore.
Right. I think you nailed exactly. This is closer to Sworn In than I want to be, than it, maybe it's fair for me to say. In my head, it's totally an AN acolyte. Fun fact, Panic was the band Stop and Think, and Panic essentially broke off from same group of people. We're doing a band. And a couple of them wanted to go one way and a couple of them wanted to go the other. So half went and did Stop and Think. The other half went and did Panic.
Wow. Okay.
Pretty funny. Sense. All right. In the top 2, number 2, American Nightmare, The Sun Isn't Getting Any Brighter. And number 1, American Nightmare, Self-Titled.
Hey, yeah.
And that's the other one, is like, if we compile all the ways those AN records were sold, because the AN Self-Titled EP came out as a CD EP and on vinyl. And then Sun Isn't Getting Any Brighter came out as a 7-inch, you know, and then and also as a mini CD. That's right.
That's right. Cause that and the Panic records were.
Had the loot. Yeah. The like little, like, and I don't know if it's technically a mini CD, but it looked like a mini CD. and those sold. And then they did the year one collection, and then they did another version of that.
Right.
So there's been a lot of versions of that record. So that might be there. And like, again, I don't think you ever hear it on this show, but it can't be understated how big American Nightmare was. In 2000, 2001, and 2002. It was, you couldn't escape it.
In my experience in hardcore, there were very few bands that had that level of energy around them.
Full stop. Yeah, totally.
We go, remember, like, you know, I mean, me and you, like, I mean, we both fuck with No Warning Heavy.
Yes.
They had a fucking vibe around them. Mm-hmm. It was nothing like American Nightmare.
No, no.
Like, no. I don't think very few bands that I can think of in the 20, whatever the fuck, almost 30 years ago in hardcore shows. Yeah. That I was, when they came out, I was like, oh shit. Okay. This is like a different thing.
Yeah. I mean,
we just insanity.
Yes. You know, like,
Turnstile would be a comparable.
I mean, here's the thing. I think, like, I would put Turnstile, I would put Trapped Under Ice, I would put Have Heart in this step where it was like, yo, these were bands who were around and built up and built up and then exploded. And like popped.
I think Turnstile like never had a shit show. Like, right. Half Hard probably terrible. Like,
they had some bad tours for sure.
You know what I mean? But like, I think from the rip, Turnstile was like, people were all about that.
I think probably so too, but I think there were times where like beyond, I think, you know, like we forget that Nonstop Feeling doesn't come out till like 2013 or 14, something like that.
But I mean, that demo
was big. They were doing well, but like they were still like, they would do shows where it was like 100 people. You know what I mean? They would still play like the VFW Hall. And it's not to say that AN didn't do that. They did. Right. But what they did that was so different is that they did so much in their first 6 months of being a band, basically, that by the time their 7-inch came out, and again, they still did like, they were playing like small VFW tours right when their 7-inch came out, but they were owning it in such a way that like 6 months after that, they not just were like a thing everyone liked, but they had a vibe. They had like the fact that everyone like the aesthetically people were drawn to the look, but also aesthetically as a band, people were drawn to the look, you know, like, I don't know that we talk about that enough, is that everyone like glommed onto the sound and look in a way that like, even if you didn't like AN, well, the big local band from your town did, and they're stealing their sound. So kind of you like AN.
Right. Like, guess what? Like, all of a sudden, everyone has fucking Oasis haircuts. Yes. I mean, fucking Diesel jeans because of Wes. You know what I mean? That dude had a, it was, you know, was like iconic, even as like, as stupid as it sounds in hardcore, as like a fashion icon. You know what I mean?
And the part that I'd love to talk to the dude about, I think it was probably like 22. You know, right.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm a fan. I'm enough of a fan that I know the lyrics. He was born in 79.
That's so right.
2002, he was 21 years old or 22 years old. Fucking dealing with
this. All right. So we'll go through the Death Wish list too. We won't take too long with this. 25, Cold Cave, Oceans with No End. Cool record. And I think they've done a couple Cold Cave records, and that's sort of fucked up because like Cold Cave's a fucking huge band. Rise and Fall, Our Circle is Vicious. Love Rise and Fall.
Oh, yeah.
Deaf Heaven Sunbather, quietly one of the biggest records of the past 10 years. 22, Hope Conspiracy Suicide File Split EP. Great split, and I think exposed people on both sides of the fan line to the other. You know what I mean? Which is weird to say because clearly there's a shared guitar player there. You know? Horror Show, Our Design.
I dig it.
Pre-Nothing. All right. Number 20. Yep. One of the Acolytes. 20, Blacklisted, We're Unstoppable. The early Blacklisted recordings all compiled. Awesome.
Yes. That would be higher for me, but yes.
That's, yeah, like in the top five for me for sure. 19, Some Girls, The Rains EP. This one doesn't totally do it for me. I remember being totally curious about the sound. But for some people went from AN to this and were like, yo, this is better.
Yeah, that's just crazy talk. But it's very good.
Crazy talk to me. But yeah, you know, this is threading the line kind of into that more screamo-y type scene. So, all right, you know. And by screamo-y, I should clarify, not screamo the genre, but like screechy, noisy, strained kind of vibe.
Right, more like 31G kind of sound.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. 18, Hope Conspiracy, Death Knows Your Name. Where do you stand on this record? This is where they get a little bit more like rock and roll, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm dealing with work shit as we talk.
No worries.
It's good. My whole thing is like people when they're, you know, and I mean, I'd be happy to see Hope Conspiracy again, but like when this record came out, like, and I love all those dudes personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but this is where they fell off. This is when you were seeing them at like the basement at like Knitting Factory in front of 50 kids.
Right. Right. The energy changes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that people that want them to play Sound and Fury are hoping for fucking Cold Blue. As much as I like to say everyone loves Death Knows Your Name, if they came out and did a set of Death Knows Your Name songs, people would be super pissed.
I also think live setting, those earlier records just hit better in a live setting. Yeah, you know? So
really, really good. But yeah. This is a different type of band. This is when they became, they were no longer the Hope Conspiracy. They were Hope Con.
That's right. Okay. I think that puts it well. Number 17, Lifelong Tragedy, Runaways. For some people, this is a easy top five record. Never got into this band. Did very, very well in California in the mid-2000s.
What was the band? I'm sorry.
No problem. Lifelong Tragedy.
Yeah, I know. I only know the name.
Yeah. Bitter End, Guilty as Charged.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yes. Sleeper hit from 2015. Everybody who likes New York hardcore should know this record. 15, Cold World, dedicated to babies who came feet first. This is their first LP on Deathwish.
Yeah. It's good.
I love this record. And I think, you know, I think Cold World is a shower, they're a grower, not a shower band. I think it grows on you. The more you listen to their records, and I think this is a great, this is like a huge compliment to them. The more you listen to their records, the more you find it is an earworm. The more you hear in the record, there's more references. It's fucking great. I might even say, I think my favorite, and there's some nostalgia to it, is Ice Girls. That might be the record that I say, this is the record you should hear first, but Dedicated might be their best record to me. Number 14, Cursed, One. I've never really jumped into the Cursed bucket. If I'm going to be honest, like the fact that they were so loved and such a t-shirt band hurt them to me, which is weird from somebody who loves Bold. But it, it just was an odd time and they had a moment where people were obsessed with them.
Oh, yeah.
Pulling Teeth, Paranoid Delusions, Paradise Illusions. I think there's a cool record. Kind of dirty, gnarly, secretly kind of, and I mean, not so secretly, but if you like anything in the A389 world, I think they kicked it off, this weird blend of dirty punk with some metal roots, but leaning into the punk and hardcore scene. Shout out to Pulling Teeth for pulling that off.
Hell yeah.
Number 12, Doom Riders, Darkness Comes Alive.
This is cool. I mean, I think Nate's got a great voice.
Yeah.
But this is like, to me, like prototypical tattooer door guy. So.
Yeah. I think this is the record I would tell people to check out for Doom Riders, though. This is the one. This is their record.
Black Thunder or something. It's fucking great. Yeah. But
This is bouncer core. Number 11, Trap Them, Seizures and Barren Praise.
I really, you know what? A buddy of mine, sorry.
I know you're dealing, no worries.
So I'm not totally fucking here. A buddy of mine played for this band at this point. I really, really loved the Deathwish stuff.
Yes.
I thought, while he was in it, they were sort of underrated.
Yes.
I think they were doing the whole Entombed Core thing pretty early on.
Yes, that's for sure.
Doing it really, really, really well and sort of kind of being overlooked. They sort of took off after a while, but many a time I would see them in Brooklyn to 35 people. But
I think that's true.
Fucking great. Fucking great band.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I'm going to go back and listen to some of their this is the only album that was truly on. No, there's Seance Prime is an EP, I guess. This is the only record that's on Deathwish, but I associate this band with Deathwish because of that record. That's a big compliment to Deathwish, actually. I like their last record, Crown Feral, which is on Prosthetic, where I'm looking at it up right now. If you go to Trap Them's Wikipedia, it refers to them as an American hardcore punk band. So I'm like, okay, yeah. But then on the album, it refers to them as a grindcore band. And I don't think I would call them a grindcore band.
Not remotely.
So, all right. Come on. Step up your game, Wikipedia. Number 10, Bitter End, Climate of Thea.
Amazing. Everyone is listening to it this week because of the climate of fear that we are currently.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yo, get some spins on that record. Good record. Dude,
every other story is somebody listening to
Climate of Fear.
Okay, get those residuals.
Yeah, do it. Number 9, Ludax, Black Eyed Blues.
Sure.
A live, fun band to watch. Record never did it for me.
It was wild and like throwing himself through tables and shit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, would do well at the Suburban Fight wrestling events.
Part of the action.
Number 8, Converge, Unloved and Weeded Out. Is that the collection of all the old stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Not the best, but I respect them for compiling it and having it somewhere because they're clearly embarrassed by it.
Number 7, Rise and Fall into Oblivion. This is my favorite Rise and Fall record. Most likely just because it's when I met those guys. And I this record I listened to a lot when it came out. Number 6, Hope Conspiracy, True Nihilist EP.
Same. I think this is comparable to the
Philo 3.
No, Death Knows Your Name.
You're right. Okay.
This is LeBron, I believe.
Yeah. Number 5, Touche Amore, Is Survived By. Huh. So it's interesting. Go ahead. This is the second Touche record.
I think this might be their best, isn't it?
This is the blue cover one. Yeah. I think there are people. Yes. This record, I believe people loved.
Yeah.
I think the Parting the Sea Between Brightness and Me. Is that it?
I always call it Parting the Sea.
Parting the Sea, right? Parting the Sea is the one I think. I mean, whatever. The two, the beat of a dead horse. I think these were, that's one of the milestone records. And like, I was thinking of this when I was listening to that band Slow Fire Pistol. Because a lot of bands get derided as screamo or blah, blah, blah. I think when you listen to the more modern versions of these things, they're quietly, they're a lot more hardcore than anyone wants to admit. Like, just straight up. It's not that far off. If you listen to Touche and you don't think it's hardcore, okay, you might have a more narrow view than I do, which is saying something. Number 4, Shipwreck, Abyss. This is their LP.
This is their crowning achievement.
I agree. What's funny is I think that some of these songs were harder for people to get into because it's kind of a concept record. I think it's really cool. It's a great sit and listen, full album listen. And yo, we all got time on our hands. This is the time to do it. And here we go to the top 3. I don't think these will be too much of a surprise, but number 3, Blacklisted, Heavier Than Heaven, Lonelier Than God.
Yeah, that's my
favorite. Yep. Yeah. Number 2, Modern Life Is War, Witness.
You can't really. This is
that's one of the defining ones.
The LP before this too, but I think this is their fucking high watermark.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And number 1, this is a little bit of a twist, but I agree. He calls this the pinnacle of Blacklisted songs. It's Blacklisted, Peace on Earth, War on Stage EP. This is the EP that came out right before Heavier Than Heaven.
I mean, it's weird. It's like an EP, so it's like, I don't know if that's, unless all you have are EPs, I think it's hard to call an EP your pinnacle.
I know. And here's where we have Patrick. Let's have Patrick chime in and be like, oh no, that's wrong. No, LPs are terrible. Peace on Earth, War on Stage, I want to give it big credit because they had broken up and then had rethought it and were like, fuck it, let's keep this band going. And I think it's their most honest record and most them record to point. I think this is also the point where George's lyrics before this are really good, but a little more straightforward. And this is him, I think, kind of like putting all the cards on the table and be like, fuck it, I'm going to write the lyrics I want to write. And I think it starts here and then continues from here out. And it's one of the things that separates Blacklisted as a great band among a lot of good bands.
Yeah, I mean, I like the kind of the early stuff. I mean, it's a little bit more like
meat-heady. Does anyone not like Eye for an Eye? Jesus Christ.
I mean, now that it's back on streaming.
Yeah. Oof. But you like some of the earlier stuff.
I love it. But it's definitely more like brute hardcore kind of stuff. And I think this is where they slowly get artsier as they go along.
Yeah. For better or worse, as people consider it. But like, I actually, and I love this era, and I want to shout out, there's a lot of people who love this era of Blacklisted. I'll shout out Sean Riley and my buddy Kevin Hare as people who are like, yo, this era, which is like 2006, 2007 Blacklisted, where they're still playing a lot of the early material live, but then mixing these songs in. And
it works perfect.
So good. It's so good. So I think so. That was the top 25 Death Wish and Bridge Nine records as per Taylor. Fun activity. If we were to do this ourselves, I think we'd have a different list. Maybe we'll do this sometime. Maybe we'll do our top 10, maybe. And that might be a fun activity to do.
But I think he covered. I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that would like.
Let me think about this. He got No Warning. He got that stuff.
Nothing that really like, kind of jumps out.
Yeah, he's got a pretty comprehensive list, and it's more just order. I think he's got both Bitter End, Guilty's Charged. He's missing one Bitter End LP that is really good, but you know he's got two LPs on here, so I'm not mad at his Bitter End respect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yo, Tom, thank you. Let's call it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Be safe out there.